Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, John McKinnon. And together, we're talking about the mythologies, the strange mythologies that built this entire revival movement and this mess that we see today. John, it's good to be back and to talk about all things mythologies and all things mess and dumpster fires that we see today. There are so many things going wrong with the, I hate to even brand it as Christianity, but in Christianity, pseudo-politics Christianity that we see today, it's such a mess. And I think people don't realize where most of this stemmed from, because they look at the movements today and they see it's not really based on Christianity. They're building these mythologies of individuals, and they're worshiping those mythologies, and they became, you know, they have become super apostles or super prophets or whatever. And all of that traces its roots back to what we're about to talk about today, believe it or not. In the Latter Rain movement, they were doing similar things, not to the same level as today. But it was built off of mythologies, and one of the biggest mythologies was this 1963 mystery cloud. Now, if you're in the Charismatic movement or the New Apostolic Reformation today, you've really never heard of this. This thing was so, it has been so long forgotten that I think people don't realize or recognize how big of a deal this actually was. But in the height of what would eventually transition into the Charismatic movement, William Branham claimed that seven angels came down from the heavens and basically opened up the seven seals of the book of Revelation to him, gave him the mysteries behind the seals. And when he would tell his crowd, no man is worthy to open the seals from the book of Revelation, he would say that he did it, insinuating that he was more than a man. And this kind of stuck, because you had people such as T.L. Osborne, who was a member of William Branham's deity cult, who was very fundamental in helping to start the Word of Faith movement. T.L. Osborne believed that William Branham was God in the flesh. So when T.L. Osborne is reading the Bible and it says no man is worthy to open the seven seals, well, he can bypass that scripture, because he's looking at William Branham as though William Branham is God, not man. But before that mythology became widespread in the movement, there was this 1963 mystery cloud that happened, and there's so much more to the story. Now, Charles and I, we're going through the buildup of what happened in Branhamism as it was starting to transition into the Charismatic movement and a little bit beyond this. So anybody who's joining that podcast now, they're going to miss a lot of things, because we long, long ago talked about the cloud. So I thought it'd be good to have you on and to go through your research into the cloud, maybe combine it with some of mine, and see if we can make something interesting for people who are just now joining in the podcast with Charles and I. So welcome back.
Yes, John, it's exciting to be back here and do another episode with you. I've wanted to cover some things that I was thinking of about the mystery cloud that appeared in 1963 as we know it. And this episode will be going into some details about that and just my take on the cloud as well. So very happy to be here again. And in this episode, I just want people to know, the people that are seeing this, to know that I embrace the message as truth. I believe that God had sent a prophet, and I embrace the scriptures that were taught surrounding this, such as the Malachi 4 prophecy and so forth. And I once settled on these things and never thought I would ever change my mind. I just thought they were too solid. I even went to Jeffersonville in 1995, and I looked for the article myself, and this was the actual page that I printed that day, and I've kept it all these years. But as you can see, it only showed that 14 were converted in the tent meeting, and I was looking for the mystic light over the minister at the river where they were baptizing. I never found that, and I still wasn't shaken over this. It didn't bother me. I just figured, since I was looking on microfiche, I just hadn't come across the correct paper, and I, you know, just went on with that at the time. I also obtained many copies of the Life magazine that I could, so I've got the copies, you know, of the cloud in the magazine, as y'all have covered very well you and Charles. And so I had that. And when these calendars here were made available back in 1988, 89, I've still got those showing the cloud on the cover. So, inside the calendar on February the 28th, it says, Brother Branham meets seven angels on Sunset Mountain, February 28th. So they were believing it at the time and putting it in these publications and all, the message put out. But I thought these things were just solidly based on the Bible and that no challenge could ever be won about it. Even after I had been in the message 14 years and heard the issues about the cloud for the first time, it really didn't bother me because I still held out the cloud could be supernatural. Even with the issues of the bridge, as we know, y'all have talked about the bridge vision and learning about that. That didn't shake me from the message because I had other explanations of it, of course. But what eventually shook me from the message was when I began to minister to a congregation back here in my hometown and felt the responsibility to actually be correct in the scriptures. It was that time that I really discovered the errors in how, Branham had taught the critical doctrines in Christianity, how he had to manipulate what the scriptures were actually saying, to make it fit his beliefs and the ministry that he had and sway people to believe that he was the last day prophet. But I realized the Bible actually said something different and I could never reconcile the two. So I usually took what the Bible, I always took what the Bible said, but I really had to bite my tongue when I spoke because I didn't want the congregation to hear things that were contrary to the message. So I really had to dance around what I said a lot of times. And I began to avoid things that Branham had said and the way he taught it. And at the same time, I was careful not to offend the congregation by trying to say something contrary at the time. But it was really only when I saw the true history that you had put out, began to read about that and seeing the underlying history of the message that I realized it was really a corrupt system. And then I had to come out, and that was around 2019.
It's significant, especially during the years that you're talking about. Growing up in the message, we saw all kinds of different things and all kinds of different people. But the one thing that is common among all of them is they all have, to some extent, some version or variation of this cloud integrated in their propaganda. And, for the outsiders who've never been in this and they're just kind of studying what is the message and how did the New Apostolic Reformation come from all of this mess, you have to realize that things like we're about to talk about, you would never think about. So you walk into a church, and I'm not going to say all of them are like this, but I would say that there are a large number of churches that are like this. You walk into the building, and in some cases, when you walk into the foyer, you're going to see two photographs. You're going to see the William Branham halo photograph, which was taken in the Houston Coliseum. We've talked about it in the podcast. And you're also going to see this cloud thing because they have tilted it sideways. So they're not actually showing you the correct orientation of the photograph, but they've tilted it sideways. And interestingly, the photograph itself was cropped. Because there were, if the photograph were to be expanded a little bit, there were actually two clouds, not one, because they, as we'll get into, they came from some testing during the height of the Cold War from Vandenberg Air Force Base. But there were two clouds. One of them, both of them were rings. One of them was a massive, massive ring, and the other one was a little bit smaller. So these two clouds were floating across Arizona. Well, you walk into the foyers of these churches and they'll have the orientation changed where it kind of looks like, they're saying it looks like a head. And when I was in it, I believed it. Now that I'm out, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, yeah, no, that's not it. But they say that it looks like a head and it's the face of Jesus. And they say that the angels were circling in this ring and they were forming the face of Jesus as they came down to William Branham. And so you walk in the churches, you'll see those two photographs. Now, some of the churches that are on the more extremist side will have, as you sit down in the congregation and you're sitting in the pews, you'll look up at the platform, and some of them will have the cloud actually hanging behind the preacher, either to the right or the left, and they'll have the halo photograph either to the right or the left. And yet, many of these men, I've been in the churches, many of them will say things like, now, we don't worship William Branham, But they've got all the relics behind them, man. So it's like, if you're out of, you know, if you've never been in this movement and you are visiting the church, maybe with family or whatever, you hear him say that and you're kind of scratching your head. Like, why do they have the relics behind the head if they're not worshiping Branham? And anyway, it is really significant. The funny part is that now it's not as significant because now it's kind of widespread that this had no link whatsoever to William Branham, this mystery cloud. In fact, there are, I want to say it was probably the late 1970s, there were actually well-known figures within the message that were just kind of questioning it. And somebody, I think I recall who did, but somebody published this pamphlet that put the timeline together, and they recognized that William Branham was in another state when this happened. And though he claimed on recording to be standing right under this thing as it came down, he could not have been, according to the timeline. I want to say that was like the mid-1980s. And so people started to wake up, including some named ministers in the movement, and just recognized, no, this isn't true. This story isn't true. It is mythology. And so it's not talked about as much today. So the followers today, by and large, aren't really aware how big of a deal this is. They've kind of discounted it. And so if there is raised a question, well, he said he was under this cloud. He never was. Many of them today are now manipulated to just simply say, I don't care. But for you and I, this was a big deal, man. This is the moment that defined the message movement for what it was. If you want to say William Branham had a quote-unquote message, this was it. This is the beginning of that message coming. And so the message that I grew up with and the one that exists today, they're two different things. But I don't know that I could stress enough the significance of this.
So yeah, John, I'm really excited to be talking about the cloud because I think there's some critical things people ought to know. That's the focus of today's podcast. So the significance of the cloud is basically what I see it as. It's like a capstone of Branham's ministry. He treated it like that. And people treat it as the Word of God was opened, so the opening of the Word. Others say Christ came down because he was looking down upon earth in the cloud. Branham's most inspired sermons ever were preached the following week when he preached the seals, and that's basically what is believed about that. You know, why is it important? Because this is prophetic vindication. If the cloud is true, and if everything that was said about the cloud and what and actually how the events took place was true, this is actually prophetic vindication. Prophecy was fulfilled, and the coming of the Lord was at hand. If the coming of the Lord hadn't already happened. The issues with the cloud, though, what I will say is that when you look at the true history of the cloud was misrepresented, you know, to the people, even from the beginning. You know, Branham was the first one to misrepresent the cloud, and it's due to this Life magazine that came out, and he saw that cloud in there, and they took that, somehow he managed to create this picture in his mind that I was out there close to that time. I can probably use this in my ministry because they're really saying they don't know what caused the cloud. Well, I can say it was the seven angels that met me. So there were intentional statements made which were never proven, and nor were they true, and they were told to capture the minds of the people. So when you can come back and, you know, you went out there from a message you preached in December, and you say all these supernatural things that had happened to you and all the dreams and visions, so-called, that they were told that put it all together, then you can build it up in the minds of the people that some great thing took place, and people actually believe it. That's why it's called like a capstone of his ministry. And it really captured their minds, and it caused them to believe something untrue, and some of the facts are very untrue. But the whole story just centers around him. He made this cloud center around his whole ministry. And the ministry people, the ministry ministers and the closest ones to it really controlled the narrative to what the congregation heard, even through the years when they heard the facts come out. They still control the narrative and do so to this day even. So, but the real truth about the cloud was suppressed, and when it became known, you know, it was still, like I said, suppressed to this day. But we even have proof from the eyewitnesses on tape and on video that the testimony does not back up the story, but really it actually disproves it, because they emphatically say, the ones that were out there hunting with him in Arizona, say that never saw the cloud. They did hear a boom. They did see streaks in the sky, like for airplanes being made, and one of them did. And even there was a newspaper article, we'll go in later, but the newspaper said there was military aircraft flying the area at the time and making such loud booms that it even broke windows in town. So we know very likely what probably caused this boom or loud noise they heard, the sonic boom. So where we go wrong, we'll get to where we go wrong with this cloud picture. Where the message people go wrong, I believe, is that they fail to step back from the story, from all the buildup and the hype and the things about it, and we let ourselves be caught up with it. It was, we even look for the face of Jesus in there. We look for the angel's wings, and our minds can create that in the picture itself, and it may not even be there. We've not done our due diligence to really critically think about the event and line it up with the facts, the timeline even, which we know he wasn't even out there when this cloud appeared. We only have one person's account of the story. The other two couldn't even corroborate really all the facts that were told. And we only have William Branham's account of the story. And this person's had a known history of not telling the truth when it comes to supernatural things in his life. And such as things like seeing visions while he was still crawling around as a baby, or seeing the bridge vision that never happened, making up supernatural events surrounding the baptismal service, or making up extra details about the little boy who was hit by a car to make himself shown that he was doing things clearly he didn't do, just to make it appear like he was something greater than he was. And there's hundreds of other exaggerations, that he did in his ministry. And I think that's where the key thing is about this cloud that we're looking at. When you lay this out, it's just the same thing.
I would even go a step further than that, because for William Branham to have been able to pull this off, where this is an event whenever other people were present. So for him to have been able to pull this off while other people were present, those people who were there could not have seen this cloud because the timelines don't match. He is there actually hunting in Arizona after this cloud has occurred. Those same people would have been in the state of Arizona when the cloud did occur. So they would know that those two events are not connected. William Branham's out of state. I see the cloud in the sky. He comes back into the state. We go hunting. So you have to have a cover-up of sorts for this to happen. But more than that, all of the people who were not just in Arizona, but throughout the United States, this is a time of political unrest. There is the fears of Russian invasion. There's the fear of nuclear fallout, war. You've got all of the missile testing as they're trying to produce defense systems that can ward off the Russian invasion that they feel is impending. You have all of this military action in the United States and abroad that is preparing for World War III. So the fear is very heightened. And you have people who, now the people in Arizona, they're hearing, according to the newspapers, they're hearing blasts constantly. They're under constant fallout from the testing that's happening in the Air Force bases and the Army bases around them. So they're aware of all of these booms and these blasts, and I'm sure they had to have seen smaller rings as they're detonating missiles that aren't as high as this one was. And those people would never have critically tied the two together because they're brainwashed not to. But there comes a point at which they start to think through the timeline as they get older, and you start to recognize that, wait a minute, this was all missile testing, and it was all over the newspapers that they were doing this, and this mystery cloud, there was initially a mystery because it was classified what happened, but there came a point at which it was no longer classified. So every single person who is in the message of William Branham who stumbles across this, they have to cover it up. Otherwise, the whole thing, it's like opening the lid and all of a sudden all of the dark secrets come out. There are people who kept the lids on this, and I think that is one of the biggest problems that we see with all of it today.
Well, John, I just want to start with the known provable facts about the cloud. When you can do all the research about it, and you and Charles have done great research, Peter Deiser and John Kenna and all others who have done the research, even Perry Green, you know, knew these facts. But the cloud was over Flagstaff in February 28th. It became visible when the sun went below the horizon. It was called a noctilucent cloud. It's true that scientists were puzzled at first. They were wanting to figure out what it was because it was such a phenomena that usually wasn't seen very often, or maybe had ever been seen or photographed like it was. And it's true that the famous cloud, which message believers say was the head of Christ, was featured in Life magazine, Science magazine, and some other publications. It's true that there were actually two clouds in the sky that evening. There's only one minister in Ohio that preached a sermon on the cloud that has even attempted to explain the two clouds. But he tried to explain that. And it's kind of interesting what he said. Maybe I'll mention that a little later on. It's also true that at Vandenberg Airfield, you know, two rockets were launched that day, that same day that the cloud appeared. One was blown up, Thor rocket, and the other was listed on the records as partially successful. So I don't know if they also detonated that rocket as well. But since there were two clouds and two rockets in the sky that day, we can assume that since it wasn't totally successful, maybe they did. It's not a lot of records I could find on that. Maybe y'all have more. It's also true that eventually scientists concluded the cloud was made up or blown up by the Thor rocket. It's true that the winds aloft at the same altitude as the cloud appeared, they say in the magazine or in the writings, it was tantalizingly close to the speeds needed to bring that blown up rocket fuel from Vandenberg to Flagstaff in the time calculated. So that's kind of interesting. At the same altitude, the winds aloft were very, very close to the speeds needed to move that cloud to Flagstaff in the time that it was seen. It's also true that these clouds are very common. You know, this isn't a unique cloud. They're made by the same mechanism as the cloud in 63 was. There's been many photographed even after this. It's also true that the newspapers during this time reported military aircraft cruising the area, causing sonic booms or blasts that broke windows. So it wouldn't be surprising that people in the area where Branham was hunting or later on in March, in the first week of March, would hear blasts like sonic booms. But a few more truths about this. It's also true that William Branham, on the flip side of this, used this cloud in his ministry to represent prophetic vindication. It's also true that he represented himself to be at the spot where the cloud ascended to the skies on February 28th. He represented himself to be there, but we know for a fact he actually wasn't. It's also true that Branham said that a mist went up from his feet and into the air to form that cloud. It's also true that Branham said Branham was in Houston, Texas on February 28th. He was not where the cloud appeared. It is true that he was hunting on the first week of March near Tucson, but we know that this is about 200 miles from where the cloud was spotted. Now, how do you say you're underneath the cloud when it's 200 miles to your north? It's also true that his eyewitnesses, which are his two closest friends who were hunting with him, heard a blast, as we've said. And Branham also relayed that he heard blasts in a vision in December 1962. It is true that his friends never saw a cloud, and one admitted never seeing anything. It is true that one friend admitted he never saw a cloud, but actually said he saw streaks in the sky, such as an airplane would leave. It's also true that the military was conducting Air Force exercises in the same area, and they left sonic booms so loud it broke windows in town. It's true that Branham never spoke of seeing a cloud during the time he was in Tucson, Arizona, prior to seeing it in Life magazine a couple of months later in May 17th. It's also true that he planned to actually live in Arizona and planned to go hog hunting the first week of March and had been planning to eventually preach the seals, which he alluded to many times during his sermons as he worked his way through the book of Revelation, and actually using an outright copy in the works of other Bible scholars and theologians while he was doing it. It's also true that Branham told Jeffersonville congregation that he was going to Tucson because of some visions and dreams that, and he relayed this in that sermon in December, "Sirs, is this the time?" It's true that the way Branham and his followers describe the event, they try to give you the mental picture of Branham being picked up by the angels off the ground and actually flying around in the sky with him while they made the cloud.
That's one thing that really hit me hard after I started to deprogram and tried to understand what was happening to my head. What had they done to hijack my brain? Once I realized and recognized that all of the variations of the things that Branham himself said about this event, they can't all be true. You can take some of them and make them true. You can take others and make them true. But if you try to put them together, none of them make any sense. And honestly, it was my wife that first found this. She started going through putting together a timeline for me as I was working on my website. And she suddenly exclaimed and came into the room where I was. And she said, John, he's adding angels to this vision. I thought, what? Well, I go back and look. And before he goes out, he says, and I'm going out to receive a message. I can't remember his exact words. But he says, basically, I saw the number five in the shape of a pyramid. I saw five angels. And then he goes through this weird thing where he says five means grace, G-R-A-C-E, because in basic elementary math, you have to associate a simple word with the number five for the angels. And anyway, he does this and he goes, and as it's growing, he's starting to realize, I think, that it would be very strategic if he were to preach the seven seals, but he mistakenly had five in this explanation of what was happening, and five doesn't work out. You've got seven angels. And so over time, he starts to change it, and he injects two angels to make it seven. That's just one of the many things that we found, but you're correct. People who our leadership in this movement have tried to take all of the things that can't be reconciled, and what they do is they create a bigger mythology on top of it, and their version of the mythology isn't even what William Branham said. And people who are trained and indoctrinated into the message, they have no idea that the minister himself is creating mythology that isn't what William Branham said. And people, like you said, they don't do the due diligence. They don't go back and see, well, what did he actually say? They just take whatever the minister says at face value. And so what happens is that creates a new mythology. Those people kind of spread it, and it disseminates across the world. And what has happened today is people who are in the movement and people who are outside who have been, you know, maybe scholarly articles who are talking to people who were in the movement, none of them really have the clear picture of what William Branham said, because you can't reconcile what it was that he said. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
Yeah, John, isn't it just amazing all the hype that's been built up around this so-called supernatural cloud, when it was so natural? It was something that can be easily explained once you know the details behind it. And of course, people aren't going to know what the military's doing. They usually keep things secret, but the truth eventually came out. So I'm going to say a few things about what people's made up, you know, to try to explain these discrepancies. Various interpretations have been made up to explain the discrepancies in his story, such as, you know, since Branham wasn't in the area the angels came down and made the cloud, which was February 28th, the angels just hung around and camped out until he came back from Houston and started hunting in the area. All right, that's kind of odd in itself. You know, I've never seen anything where God sent angels down to make a supernatural event happen and then wait around till the person comes back. You know, it just doesn't seem to make sense. And also, people have to explain, since the cloud wasn't visible in March when he was actually there hunting, when he had the vision, he says, the angels had already ascended back to heaven and only came to him by vision. So no one saw them but him. And the large cloud taken by cameras and put on live was the rocket explosion. Some people will actually admit that, while at the same time they will say the second cloud took a right turn and came down to Tucson where Branham would be hunting, and that was told by the Ohio minister who preached the sermon on the cloud. But so since there were two clouds, he would admit that the first one was the rocket explosion, the largest cloud, but the smaller cloud off to the side was actually the angels coming down to Tucson. So that's another way to explain it. There's another one that, you know, Brown's followers do use this cloud to vindicate his ministry, and they use the event as a capstone to show it was Revelation 10, verses 1 to 7 being fulfilled, you know, when Christ came down to earth to put his one foot on the land, one foot on the sea. And at that time, you know, some will go so far as to say, and some have, that Christ came off the mercy seat, so now there's no more mercy. All that would be saved is sealed in, and there's no one else going to be saved after 1963 in March or February. They use it to say the Bible, the Word, was now opened only to the bride. Anyone believing the message, the bride is the only one that has the Word open to them. And they use the event to say this was the time the exact scriptures were being fulfilled, Revelation 10, 1 to 7. They use it to tie Branham's third pull of his ministry when he said Christ would be embodied in the bride so they could speak things into existence. You know, even with all that and all that hype around the cloud, it's also true Branham intentionally misled or misrepresented the cloud event to make it an event in his ministry and incorporate it into his ministry, which leads us to the conclusion that Branham intentionally lied about these events to boost his status as the final prophet of the age. You know, he even said in Standing in the Gap in June of 1963, he said, "Now, insomuch as you noticed in Brother Jackson's dream." Now, we know from what Charles has said, Brother Jackson never had a dream. And he even says that on tape, and I think y'all have told that before. He also says, "I saw seven angels in the form of a pyramid that swept down and picked me up, and I was brought east to open the seven seals for God." And we know, if you're saying that the angels swept down and picked you up, I mean, you're trying to say to people that I was picked up in the air. I mean, what else does it mean? And then also, him opening the seven seals, we know that he copied the works of Clarence Larkin in those seven seals. Now, another thing he says, talking about the Life magazine, he says, "Now here it is, the same time I was there. See the pyramid of the cloud? I was standing just below this. And see there the distinctive angel on the right-hand side. See the pointed wing of it. Just exactly what was said." So he's alluding in these quotes here from this message, Standing in the Gap, that he was there. The angels picked him up and they were formed. They went up from where he was. He was standing just below it. I mean, all these things allude to the fact that he was saying this, you know, about a month after he saw the thing in Life magazine. Him building up the story to build it in the minds of the people that this was a supernatural event. He also says in that message, "How many remembers that I told you it sounded like a sound breaker on a plane?" Well, of course it did, because planes were flying in the area. And then he also says, and Standing in the Gap, the same message, "And while I was praying on this subject, I was wondering what would happen to me. And you know where I was at? North of Tucson, east of Flagstaff, just exactly." So since he knows that the cloud was hovering kind of north of Flagstaff there that day on the 28th of February, he had to throw Flagstaff in there somewhere, but he made it sound like he was north of Tucson, which is going toward Flagstaff. So he made it sound like he was far enough toward Flagstaff where that cloud could have been over top of him. But Flagstaff is barely west of Tucson and 200 miles between them in a straight line. And from Rattlesnake Mesa, where we know he was at, the way the crow flies, it's actually 183 miles. So pretty long ways. There was another message in Perseverant, August the 2nd of 63. He said there'll be a sound like a great blast, something like a breaker of an airplane, a sound breaker going forth. He also says, "And I looked up, and there was that white circle above me there, circling around. Here comes seven angels coming, moving down out of the air, picked me up and said, 'Go back to your home, to the east, right away, and bring those seven seals, For there is seven mysteries, for the complete word is revealed now in these seven mysteries. So that's where they get the opening of the word doctrine. He said, if you've never heard, if you've ever believed, I said anything, ever said anything in a sermon inspired, you take them tapes of the seven seals. I'm not a tape salesman. Mr. Sothman here sells tapes. Him and Mr. McGuire, I don't sell tapes. They take them. And if you ever heard anything that's really, I can say, it's thus saith the Lord, get those. Now, that's kind of a strange statement to make. He's built up this cloud that he was here. The tapes were inspired. And yet he's preaching directly off the pages of Clarence Larkin's book is what he was preaching in the seals. So I guess really Clarence Larkin should have been the one to be called the prophet of the age, because he's the one that brought so-called thus saith the Lord from the book of Revelation instead of Brother Branham. The message Perseverant, same one, he said, and you know, not at that time, I didn't know it, but the cameras from all over the country was taking the picture of that as the white cloud settled down. So yeah, of course he plays it up to the articles that were in the magazines and that was him and he was there and the cloud settled down upon him. He said, that was it right there. Just exactly the way it said, standing right under it when it come down and formed. So there he was. He was saying, he said this multiple times. He was standing right under it when it come down and formed. So he really built up the people's minds, a legend and mythology surrounding himself in this, as we can see. Here's another one. And O Lord, just once more, in June 28th of 63, talking about him preaching the seals. But if you ever believe the words that I preach and you can afford it, get the seven seals. And first get what time is it, sirs. Listen to that spoke 6 months before it happened. Now, here he is exaggerating a little bit, trying to extend his prophecy out or the message, what time is it, sirs. He spoke that in December. And of course, 2 months later was February. So again, he kind of exaggerated to make it appear like he spoke something way in advance, it seems like. And then later on in 65, when he was finishing up his ministry, he brings up the cloud again in a way, and what is the attraction on the mountain to build it up in the minds of the people. He says, talking about his thing going out to Tucson, he says, what are you going to do? It's what the people hunting with him, Fred Sothman, said to him. He says, return home, for thus saith the Lord, the seven mysteries that's been hid in the Bible all these years, these denominations and everything. God is going to open those seven mysteries to us in these seven seals. There was that circle coming up from the earth like a mist forming. When it did, it went plumb up into the mountain, began to circle on westward from the way it come. Science found it after a while, 30 miles high, 25 miles across, just exactly in the circle of a pyramid. So we can see from start to finish, after he saw this in Life magazine, you know, a couple of months after he preached the seals, then he began to latch on to the story of this cloud has something to do with my ministry, when actually it was very explainable. So yeah, John, we have really, he really built this up in the minds of the people and making them believe something. And I'm fixing to go into some things about that here in the next little segment.
One thing that really hit me, you mentioned Clarence Larkin, and for all of the researchers who are on the outside looking into this, trying to understand what is Branhamism, Clarence Larkin is the dispensationalism element that Branhamism was built upon, and it was, you know, throughout the Latter-rain movement, that was what was the core doctrine. It was dispensationalism because they were dividing the seven churches of Asia Minor that's described in the book of Revelation. They divided those into ages, and they added the word age to the seven churches in Revelation. And the setup for this was that we're in the last age, we're in the seventh, and that William Branham is the seventh angel messenger to the age. And one of the things that struck me, you talked about Branham saying he was lifted up, and there was a logical fallacy with his doctrines, because he's talking about these seven angels, and though they were bringing the message of the seven seals, well, there's a logical problem. If he's the seventh one, then there should be six up there, not seven, right? And so he catches himself. I don't know if you've recognize this, but in one of the sermons, and I can't remember which one it was, but he starts talking about these seven angels, and he says, and I looked up, and did you notice that seventh one? His chest was out really far. He was, you know, he builds him up kind of like a narcissist would build up, bragging on himself, right? And he himself realized the logical fallacy, and rather than let the crowd stop and scratch their heads and think, wait a minute, if he's the seventh, shouldn't there be six up there, not seven? He started distracting the focus and talking about how wonderful the seventh was as opposed to the others. So ironically, it turned into just a little bit of angel worship right there.
Yeah, John, I just appreciate the comments. Just want to now step back. You know, we've said all this. We've give you the facts. We've give you the underlying story of all this cloud mystery that was supposed to vindicate a prophet's ministry. So where do we go from here? You know, what is our conclusions about all this? What should we be thinking? I think we need to be very concerned about it. I think message believers really need to be very concerned, especially if you haven't come out of the message or haven't, at least if you don't know the truth, I think you need to be very concerned. And the reason why is because this thing is built on, and I hate to say it, but it's built on lies, things that are not true. And really, let's define what a lie is. The meaning of lie or lying, they actually call it a sin of making an untrue statement or acting in such a way as to leave a false or misleading impression, especially with the intent to deceive. Now, if you take everything that William Branham knew about what he did in Arizona at Tucson, and you take the things that he said about the cloud and what others have now done to build up the mystery or the legend surrounding the cloud and trying to explain it, even after knowing the facts, you know, from the very beginning, untrue statements were made, and the person was acting in such a way to leave a false impression upon the people or a misleading impression with the intent to deceive. That's what the meaning of lying is. Now, to give William Branham an excuse to lie about something like this, because you can find examples in the Bible where people do not tell the truth, especially commonly is mentioned Abraham. But if you look at the circumstances, what Abraham did when he told a lie, he told it to save his life, basically. He did not want to get killed by the king because the king had taken his half-sister, his wife, which he said, she's my sister, and the king was going to marry her on a couple of occasions where he had to lie his way out of that because he didn't want to get murdered by the king so he could have his wife. And God worked that out. But Abraham wasn't lying about, I'm a great prophet of this age, or I'm the great prophet, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, you need to listen to me, and making up stories about his life. You know, God vindicated Abraham. We have yet to see where God really vindicated William Branham in this. Now we know what lying, the meaning of a lie is, but now let's look at the characteristics. You know, the scriptures always condemn lying in the scriptures because Satan is designated as the father of the source of lies. Even John 8:44 says, when the devil speaks, he speaketh a lie, he speaks of his own because he's a liar and the father of it. But you know, it is impossible for God to lie. So you would think that his ministers should do all they can not to intentionally tell lies. So in the final analysis about lying, it's a sin against God. The liar can even deceive his own self as well. I mean, there's some cases where a person telling the lie is actually deceiving his own self. And maybe there's some evidence of that in, you know, William Branham's life. Not only in the New Testament is lying condemned, but even the Old Testament is condemned in the Ten Commandments, you know, given false witness. References to lying appear in the references in scriptures talking about idolatry or heathen worship. False prophets and diviners are as deceitful lies. There are scriptures alluding to that in Isaiah 9:15, Jeremiah 14:14, and Ezekiel 13:6. So, honesty is a cardinal virtue of followers of Christ. And lying would be a basic opposite of that. We find in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 to 19, it says, here are six things that God hates, and one more that he loathes with a passion. All right, that's eyes that are arrogant, a tongue that lies, hands that murder the innocent, a heart that hatches evil plots, feet that race down a wicked track, a mouth that lies under oath, a troublemaker in the family. That's that's in the MSG version. But it does explain there's two parts in that scripture that talks about lying. Tongues that tell lies, or a mouth that lies under oath. Now usually a preacher in the pulpit is sort of like under oath. So help me God, I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because that is a place of judgment. It's like a courtroom there, and you're supposed to be speaking the truth. And the King James Version mentions about the same scripture in Proverbs. A lying tongue is mentioned, and a false witness that speaketh lies. Says it in that way. So, lying in some cases can prevent a horrible evil from happening. Perhaps lying would be the best available option. It's similar to what the Hebrew midwives did when they lied to Pharaoh and said, you know, they were taking care of the baby, or the babies were too strong and we didn't have time to throw them in the river. And or Rahab lying when she said, the spies are gone, and she was actually hiding them out. You know, there's some instances where, you know, lying could be justified in those cases. It may not be the right thing. It may not be right in God's eyes, but in situations like that, you know, a person is put under those circumstances, they may tell a lie. But in the circumstances of preaching the word, you know, no one should intentionally lie and misrepresent the truth. Those instances also in the Bible are extremely rare, but you can find in William Branham's ministry, lying is a constant throughout the ministry, nearly start to finish. Lying will still be a sin in those most extreme circumstances. You know, still be violating the character of God. So why would we say that just because Abraham lied in the Bible, well, that gives William Branham a pass to tell lies, and we can still trust him as a true prophet of God? So we see that the most of the time when people are lying, it's either to seek to protect themselves, to promote themselves, or to harm somebody else. And that's why the lying is condemned as a sin. You know, you'll find in all the publications, such as y'all just alluded to recently, Perry Green's publications of the Acts of the Prophet, there's Owen Jorgensen's Supernatural, the Life of William Branham. He actually mentions that it was daybreak on Friday, March 8th when this happened. So even he had to admit the truth that it didn't happen February 28th, but he describes it in a way that the angels came back to him. So evidently, using that more correct date, you know, Owen's actually admitting that the angels had to come twice, because he uses those correct dates, say, and more correct dates, we'll say. But the way he describes it was be exactly how it happened on February 28th. So if the story Owen Jorgensen put in his books is true, then the same events that formed a cloud on February 28th was also when it was visible to the people, with Branham not even being there, also happened again on March 8th when a real blast was heard by people standing by, but no person saw the cloud, and only Branham was there to witness it, whether it was in vision or in reality. Here's a statement from Gene Norman, who was hunting with William Branham on Rattlesnake Mesa, and I got this from Believe the Sign when that strange event happened. Gene said this, and it's quoted, I hunted, probably half an hour, and then a blast went off. It sounded like it was right above my head. I looked up, and I didn't see nothing. Yeah, I did. I seen something, but I didn't see the cloud in the form that it shows in the picture. When I looked up, I seen two long streaks like a plane leaving a trail. Two streaks with a great miles one way and miles the other way with a spot in between, a big spot, a space in between it. So the spot is not a cloud spot, it's actually two streaks of airplane with a big space in between them. That was an actual quote, and from Gene Norman, who was hunting with him. So we see he never saw a cloud. And the booms, like we said, the Arizona Republic in March 1st edition of that paper included an article called Shaken Up by Sonic Booms. The article tells of multiple sonic booms over the town of Springerville, Arizona, caused by aircraft from Williams Air Force Base. Some were so loud they cracked windows in the town. So I won't read the details about that, but the speed of sound, you know, 768 miles an hour. Rattlesnake Mesa is 80 miles southeast of Phoenix, and this was very close to where the airplanes took off, so it doesn't take long to go 80 miles when you're traveling at the speed of sound. William Branham described the same event in the sermon called The Seventh Seal on March 24, 1963. He said, a little over a week ago, I was way back up in the mountains nearly to Mexico with two brethren, picking the sand burrs off my trousers leg, and a blast went off almost, looked like shook the mountains down. And there's no mention of the cloud in that sermon at all. So if Gene Norman is really right, what actually looked like a plane leaving a trail was actually the plane leaving the trail. And then in Come Follow Me in 1963 in June, and that's after he saw the magazine picture, he said, and they took the picture, you know, in the sky, and I didn't think much about it, never noticed it, so it began to impress me somehow the other day. And Brother Norman, Norman's father's here, told me, said, did you notice this? And I just looked. Right there was them angels, just as plain as they could be, sitting right there in that picture. And he's talking about the Life magazine he was shown in May. You see, I looked to see when it was, and it was time about a day or two before, a day or two after I was up there. I looked where it was at, northeast of Flagstaff or Prescott, which is below Flagstaff, which was just where we was at, just exactly. So he's always having to twist the story to make it appear like he was so close to where the cloud appeared, because now he's saying Prescott being below Flagstaff, and he was northeast of Tucson and east of Flagstaff, but he was still 200 miles away. Even if he was there at the time of the cloud, he was still too far away for it to be under him. I mean, you try standing under the sky and then somebody go 200 miles away and see how close you are. If there was a cloud up in the sky, do y'all see the same clouds? What is the attraction in July of 65? He says, and it shall be light at the evening time upon Sunset Mountain in the Coronado Forest, 40 miles north of Tucson. Get on the map, see if Sunset Peak is there. That's exactly where it happened. I never knew it till the other day. So he was trying to allude in his sermon that all of this was a sunset time, the finishing up of the age, the coming of the Lord in the twilight there of his ministry. And of course, we talked about the military operation. So, John, I just think it all just goes to show that this thing was built on misrepresentations, untruths, and things that just were false altogether. So how... That's where I say message believers now need to be very careful in what they believe and what they say and how they're trying to interpret this cloud.
Absolutely. I think that's the biggest thing. If you take anything away from this podcast episode, it's that if you're in whatever it is, whether it's Branhamism, whether it's something else, and you hear something that just sounds a little bit odd, sounds a little bit fantastic, it doesn't hurt to go check and see, is the thing actually true? Because you don't know, the minister may be just creating his own mythology for whatever unknown reason. And that's what happened here. William Branham created his mythology. Then once ministers start to recognize that, wait a minute, you can't really make everything he say add up to be true, so we'll make a bigger mythology around it. That's what happened here. And if the people who were listening to those ministers had have just stopped and thought, oh, wait a minute, is this true? Let's go check. And went and checked, they would be able to just completely discount the whole thing. So I agree. This is something that people should do. It's an exercise we should all do. But thank you so much for doing this with me.
So, John, it's been a great episode, and I really enjoyed speaking about this. And I just was trying to put together some things because y'all very much laid out the facts of this cloud many times before. But just to give another perspective of this, just to nail it down and to show that things built on misstatements, mistruths, lies, you just can't trust them. And how can you trust that this was ever an event in William Branham's life and ministry when it was built on such, you know, falsehoods? So conclusion-wise, we can say the cloud was not even a supernatural event, but was a very natural event, which was given some special significance by a man trying to portray himself as a great prophet of God, fulfilling prophecy. William Branham never once spoke anything about a cloud or a mist or a circle of light that ascended where he was when he was there to receive the vision of the seven angels coming. The cloud, which formed an unspent rocket fuel from a blown-up rocket, was just a coincidence that it happened to form around the same time Branham said he was in the state of Arizona, not really where he was near the cloud at all. It's clear that he was 1,200 miles away when the cloud actually appeared. He was in Houston. And there's no significance to William Branham concerning this cloud at all. And there's no similar biblical precedent that we can say that angels, when they're delivering a message, that would actually come down to earth in a supernatural way and hang around for 7 or so days while you're in another state waiting for you to return so they could deliver a message to you. But that's exactly what we're asked to believe, or we'll ask Acts to believe that they ascended back up into heaven, came back down in some vision or in a real way to pick William Branham up in the sky to tell him to go back and preach to seals. That's what we're asked to believe. When it seemed there was no rational explanation for this cloud at the time, Branham was quick to use that cloud story. He said, as I pondered on it, he convinced himself and he convinced others that this event was related to him going out to Tucson and then fulfilling some of the things he spoke in the 1962 sermon in December. He equated this event, too, as the greatest in his ministry. However, it's clear from a side-by-side examination when he preached the seals, if you lay out Clarence Larkin's material and some other ministers' material that he was studying at the time, he really got all his sermon material from those teachings of other well-known ministers that had preached many years before him. So people will explain that. They will say, well, he might have used other people's material, but it really wasn't the sermon itself that was important. It was what God was doing, you know, in the skies and in the cloud and the vindication. So we see that if people are going to say that and say, well, the sermon material is not very important, it's all the supernatural things surrounding it that showed that God was opening the word to the bride. So it's all mysterious. It's all supernatural. It's all by revelation that only the bride will get. Well, you've just built the whole thing on a lie. You know, your whole message is built on a lie then. Your opening of the word, your Christ coming down, it's all built on something that's not even true. So either you got to take the sermon content and say that was the most inspired he's ever preached, which was plagiarism, or you got to take the supernatural side and say, well, all the supernatural events vindicated his ministry, which were built on lies. So how do you choose either? So by this time in Branham's ministry, he had a very strong core following, but not from the larger church world and not even around the world yet. His core followers were very eager to accept anything he told them as truth. He was made to be larger than life, even to the point of being God himself in the body of William Branham. This story gained traction and continues to this day to retain significance, even though the story is not corroborated with all the evidence we have now. As the message continues, what I see happening is the younger generation is being taught, is being, you could say brainwashed, but being taught, and they're getting their story down, they're being indoctrinated by people in positions of trust. And sometimes they use fear tactics to the congregation to just believe what these elders are saying to them without even trying to look at anything contrary, any other evidence, or you risk losing your soul. Now, these young ministers coming up, under their fathers and now taking over the congregations, it's only going to continue and perpetuate, you know, these falsehoods unless people wake up now and begin to take a critical look at what's being said and what has happened in the actual historical context of all this. So this method of indoctrination that's happening now, even with the little kids, say in homeschooling situations, it's going to continue to perpetuate these myths for a long time about this natural phenomena that happened. And only if time continues with the cloud myth eventually fade into obscurity, I think, John. I think we're in this for the long haul, and hopefully that many people will see these podcasts and begin to think critically on their own and begin to question, you know, why would people have to build such a story around a man that's untrue when if he was a true prophet of God, the story, his life and his ministry would stand on its own two feet and not have to be supported by, you know, something that's not true.
Absolutely. If it's not true, it can only be mythology. It's myth, right? So what, there's no two ways to put it. You're either in Christianity and you're worshiping Jesus Christ, or you're in mythology and worshiping the gods of mythology. It's one or the other. You can't have both. So I again, thank you for doing this. This is fascinating.
Yeah, John, I appreciate the time we spent today. I appreciate the time you took to let me go over some things and all the comments that were made. And look forward to doing some future podcasts with you. I've got some other ideas, and we'll be getting together in the coming days.
Awesome. Yeah, let's do it. There's so much more that we could talk about. So thank you so much. If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.